Crow T Robot from Mystery Science Theater 3000 here on 90.7 WGXC. What's the C stand for? Crow, I'm pretty sure. Yep. Maybe not.
Hi, this is Debbie Mayer in Hudson, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 on your radio dial or streaming 24/7 at WGXC.org.
Monday, January 2nd, tune in all sorts of creative community voices on 90.7 FM WGXC, including at 11 a.m. Brendan Donegan is live from the WGXC Hudson studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street. He's playing three artists from Canada. There's new music throughout the afternoon from the Deep Threes and Vital Weekly programs. Then at 4 p.m., the WGXC Afternoon Show is live from Western Massachusetts with Kieran Riley as your host. At 8 p.m., we're live from Acro with Winslow from Athens and his Upon the Cypress Bough show that focuses on music from Western Asia, North Africa, and Central Asia. And then folks from Palinville, Nick and Lisa, host the Radiant Point Show at 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM WGXC. The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Cochrane Media of Cairo, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
What else do DJs get? I mean, we're just voices in the air, but we're what makes radio live. And what do we get for it? Seems like every year you pack everything up, move to another town. Gets harder and harder to find a station that'll let you program music you want to play. Well, you're 40 and there's some kid half your age who will take your job and do it for half the money. And then you find yourself making silly demands. Free coffee. But that's my little moment of honesty, so we can get back to the nonsense.
I'm Tom Rowe in the WGXC Newsroom with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Karen DeWitt reports for WSKG-TV that Kathy Hochul will make history January 1st when she is sworn in as governor and begins her first full term in office. In November, Hochul became the first female governor to be elected in the state's history. Quote, "The glass ceiling, like the one that's above us here today, has finally been shattered in the state of New York, and you made it happen," unquote, Hochul told supporters in Lower Manhattan on November 8th. She will begin her term with a swearing-in ceremony and a speech on New Year's Day. The Buffalo native replaced former Governor Andrew Cuomo, who resigned in August 2021 over sexual harassment and other scandals. Hochul raised a record $45 million for her campaign and won election in the closest gubernatorial race in the state in nearly a quarter century. She will oversee a budget during a time when the state does not have as much money as it did last year and is also facing an increasingly independent-minded state legislature, where Democrats hold supermajorities in both houses. In addition, Hochul faces calls from Republicans who are in the minority in the legislature to enact more anti-crime legislation. She begins the new year with obstacles for her choice as the state's next chief judge, Appellate Court Justice Hector LaSalle. At least a dozen senators from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, including Saugerties Democrat Michelle Hinchey, say LaSalle's record is too conservative and they will not vote to confirm him. After she is officially sworn in, Hochul has two more major speeches in January, first to lay out her plans in the State of the State message, followed by a budget presentation outlining the state's spending priorities for the coming year. Read more about this story at WSKG.org. Melissa Mano reports for the Times Union that all new passenger cars and trucks sold in New York will be zero-emission vehicles by 2035, the State Department of Environmental Conservation said. New York is the most recent state to adopt the Advanced Clean Car 2 regulations. Those regulations are intended to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and provide significant air quality and health benefits, especially in low-income communities burdened by transportation-related pollution. The state will invest more than $1 billion in zero-emission vehicles over the next 5 years to meet its 100% all-electric vehicle sales goal by 2035. The plan intends to promote sustainability and renewable energy. Regulations include revised pollutant standards for passenger cars, light-duty trucks, and medium-duty vehicles with internal combustion engines made between 2026 through 2034. The adoption of Advanced Clean Cars 2 has been in the works since the enactment of the climate plan in 2019, and it will support the state in achieving its goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 85% from 2050 through from 1990 levels as required by the Climate Act. The state will launch initiatives including zero-emission vehicle purchase rebates through NERSDA to expand electric vehicle use, and the Advanced Building Codes Appliance and Equipment Efficiency Standards Act of 2022 will go into effect January 1st to set minimum energy and water efficiency requirements for residential and commercial products. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Columbia Green Media reports that Gary C. Valek has been named Chief Executive Officer of the Johnson Newspaper Corporation, effective January 1st. Johnson Newspaper Corporation locally publishes the Daily Mail, Register Star, and more than 10 other local newspapers statewide. Valek is Johnson's newspaper's first non-family chief executive officer in four generations. He previously served as vice president, has been with the company since 2014, and has decades of newspaper experience working in advertising, circulation, and marketing. Valek has a degree in communications from Ithaca College and a master's from Syracuse University. Before joining Johnson Newspaper Corp., he was employed by the Syracuse Post-Standard. Alec E. Johnson, company president, editor, and publisher, said Valek's commitment to the company over the past 8 years and his vision for the future made him an easy pick for the role. Quote, "As we look to the future, it is time to set specific roles and clearly delineate responsibilities. It is the best interest of our company to have someone outside the family with new and different ideas in the chief management role," unquote, Johnson said. Quote, "Gary has a proven track record of success. I have worked with him daily, and he has risen to every occasion that has presented itself," unquote, he said. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Read more about any of these stories in the WGXC Newsroom at WGXC.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Paul Kirby is reporting for the Daily Freeman. In a statement Thursday, December 29th, State Senator Michelle Henchy said she will vote against Governor Kathy Hochul's nomination of Judge Hector LaSalle to serve as the next Chief Judge of the Court of Appeals. In a statement Thursday and tweets posted on December 22nd, the Saugerties Democrat said, and I quote, "While I express my support for the many other accomplished and experienced Chief Judge candidates, I had also made it clear that I cannot support a nominee who has delivered anti-choice, anti-union rulings. If the Honorable LaSalle's nomination comes to the floor, I will vote no," end quote. Henchy said LaSalle's nomination should be opposed. And I quote, "especially at a time when our rights are being attacked by a highly conservative U.S. Supreme Court. It's of the utmost importance that, here in our state, we appoint judges who deeply believe in and defend our New York values," end quote. Hochul nominated LaSalle on December 22nd to head the Court of Appeals. If approved, LaSalle would be the first Latino to head that court and serve as head administrator for the statewide court system. LaSalle is a Long Island native and former prosecutor. He is currently the presiding justice of the state second appellate division, which handles appeals from the state courts in Staten Island, Brooklyn, Queens, and Long Island. His nomination is supported by a number of Democrats, including Attorney General Letitia James and Kingston Mayor Steve Noble. However, the nomination has drawn criticism from others, particularly progressive lawmakers and advocates who cite his history of controversial opinions and past work as a prosecutor. The Senate has 30 days from December 22nd to vote on the nominee. And you can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Andrea Meko is reporting for Porcupine Soup. Town of Cairo residents and officials received unpleasant news this week when they determined the town's 2023 tax levy increase is 7.5%, nearly 15 times higher than the 0.513% that town supervisor Jason Watts projected when the town board adopted the budget on November 7th. Because 7.5% far exceeds the state tax cap, the board has held a short emergency meeting on the afternoon of December 29th and adopted a local law to override the cap. However, questions remain as to whether the board acted too late and exactly how the mistake was made in the first place. Town Attorney Tal Raplia explained during the emergency meeting, and I quote, "We realized just last night, notwithstanding the fact that we thought the tax levy was going to go up by 0.5%, that when tax bills came out, it is actually 7.5%, end quote. He added, and I quote, "We don't know how this happened. The only thing we can think of is there was some type of typographical or accounting error in the document that the town presented on the night of the public hearing," end quote. The board ultimately voted unanimously to override the tax cap, with Watts board members Mary Jo Cords and Deborah Bogans present. Members Tim Powers and Michael Flannery were absent. In an email, Powers said that while he had voted to adopt the 2023 budget in November, he did so because Watts told the board the tax levy increase was going to be less than 8%. What's more, he said, and I quote, "The emergency meeting was supposed to be at 7 p.m. on Thursday, but after I indicated that I was against overriding the tax cap and wanted to rescind the entire budget, they moved the meeting to 1 p.m. They knew I couldn't be there due to work," end quote. The announcement of the emergency meeting, called Thursday morning, was posted on the door to Town Hall. No notices were placed on the town's website or Facebook page, and, to date, there is no 2023 budget information available at townofcairo.com. Under state law, local governments must keep the annual tax levy increase at or below the cap or adopt a local law to override the cap. In October, the Cairo Town Board conducted the required public hearing in anticipation of adopting a local law, but never followed through. Residents and local attorney Monica Kenny Keff told Raplia from the audience, "The state does not allow local governments to retroactively override the tax cap." She said, and I quote, "This has to be in place and passed before the vote on the budget," end quote. Read the full story at porcupinesoup.com. Jamal Cutler is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Hudson Common Council Wednesday, December 28th, adopted a new local law taking the first step toward the creation of a sidewalk improvement district that would be subsidized by a fee assessed to residents. At the special meeting held to discuss the city's deteriorating sidewalks Wednesday, the council immediately went behind closed doors for 25 minutes to discuss with legal counsel the proposed local law that would create a sidewalk improvement district. Elected officials were working under a January 1st deadline to act on the resolution or face an undetermined penalty for noncompliance from the state. Under the measure, the annual maintenance fee for undeveloped lots and silver lots is zero. For low foot traffic lots, it is $100, and for all others, it is $200. The frontage fee will be $30, and the square footage fee is 15 cents per square foot. The fees will be reviewed annually by the council. Fees will be determined by the property classification. Common Council President Thomas DiPietro said he was pleased with the meeting's outcome. He said, and I quote, "After a bumpy start with the council, we cleared up all the misinformation and arrived at unanimous support for moving this forward," end quote. Editor's note, DiPietro was a volunteer WGXE on-air host, and you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXE News Update. You can visit our website at WGXE.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXE sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day, a nice weekend, and a happy new year.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast for Sunday, January 1st, 2023. We start each renewable weather forecast with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Citgo in South Caro has gas for $3.29 a gallon. That's the lowest, according to the Gas Buddy website. The air quality forecast is supposed to be a 2, very low on Sunday, and the UV index is just a 1. The water temperature in the Hudson River in Albany is still above 45 degrees Fahrenheit. And over the last 10 years, on January 1st, the average temperature is below 42 degrees. So it's a lot warmer than it usually is at this time of year, at least lately. The National Weather Service in Albany says New Year's Day should be mostly cloudy, with a high of 44 and a west wind 8 to 13 miles per hour spinning local windmills. Sunday should be cloudy with, Monday should be mostly cloudy also, with a high of 46, a low around 35, and a 20% chance of precipitation Monday night. And then it turns to a 70% chance on Tuesday. Rain is mostly likely between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. Should be cloudy with a high of 50 and a low around 48. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears. Monday, January 2nd, tune in all sorts of creative community voices on 90.7 FM WGXC, including at 11 a.m. Brendan Donegan is live from the WGXC Hudson Studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street, and he's playing three artists from Canada. There's new music throughout the afternoon from the Deep Threes and Vital Weekly programs. Then at 4 p.m., the WGXC Afternoon Show is live from Western Massachusetts with Kieran Riley as your host. At 8 p.m., we're live from Acro with Winslow from Athens and his Upon the Cypress Bough show that focuses on music from Western Asia, North Africa, and Central Asia. And then folks from Palinville, Nick and Lisa, host the Radiant Point show at 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM WGXC.
Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2357 with a release date of Friday, December 30th, 2022, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2-1. The following is a QST. Hams in Switzerland get use of the 4-meter band. Amateur ranks grow on Prince Edward Island, Canada. And get ready to jump into the DX Ultra Marathon. All this and more as Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2357 comes your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent, on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Wadsworth, Ohio, Stephen Kinford, N8WB.
We begin this week with good news for the new year. Starting on the 1st of January, hams in Switzerland will be allowed to operate on the 4-meter band using all commonplace simplex modes. The Swiss Amateur Radio Association USKA reported recently that their communications authorities have granted approval to hams holding HB9 licenses for a maximum operating power of 25 watts ERP. Hams may operate only on frequencies between 70 megahertz and 70.0375 megahertz. They also have permission for the range between 70.1125 and 70.5000 megahertz. Relays and Echolink gateways will not be permitted on the band, and any stations being operated via remote control must get permission from the regulator Ofcom-CH. There is also good news for hams in Germany as temporary authorizations for certain bands have been renewed for another year. Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, has the details.
In Germany, the Federal Network Agency, BNetzA, has extended temporary allocations for amateur operation in part of the 160-meter, the 6 and 4-meter, and 13 and 6-centimeter bands. These permissions were to have expired at the end of this year, but are now granted anew until the 31st of December 2023. According to a Google translation of the announcement in the Agency Gazette, 6-meter band operation is allowed in the 50 to 50.4 megahertz frequency range. Class A license holders may use a maximum of 750 watts PEP, and Class E license holders can transmit with a maximum of 100 watts PEP, with operation only permitted using horizontal polarization. For the frequency range between 50.4 and 52 MHz, only 25 watts PEP is allowed, but contest operation is permitted. On the 4-meter band, operation is granted up to 25 watts ERP using horizontal polarization by Class A license holders and on frequencies between 70.150 and 70.210 megahertz also. At the top end of 160 meters, Class both A and E license holders may use their permitted maximum transmission power operating at weekends within the frequencies 1.85 and 2 MHz. Contest operation on 160 meters is only allowed on these frequencies at the weekend. Finally, holders of license Class E are given access to the 13 and 6 centimeter bands from 2320 to 2450 MHz and 5650 to 5850 MHz with a maximum power of 5 watts PEP, so they can take part in the Hamnet Mesh Data Network. This is Jeremy Bucci for NJH.
In one Canadian province, hams have noticed that the after effects of the past storm season haven't all been bad. Cell MB KB3TZD is here to tell us about one big change for the better.
There are a lot of happy radio operators on Prince Edward Island lately. Hams in this province of Atlantic Canada have discovered their ranks are growing. According to a report by the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, Tropical Storm Fiona and the COVID-19 pandemic have created an environment that has led island residents to discover the appeal of radio communications. Prince Edward Island, also known among island chasers as IOTA number NA029, has become a place to nurture new amateurs, according to members of the Charlottetown Amateur Radio Club. The club's president, Bill McMaster, VY2WM, told the CBC that the group's membership has grown, especially after amateur radio's profile grew during Tropical Storm Fiona this past September. At the time of the storm, local operators were helping with emergency response through the CAN-WARN Emergency Communications Network, joining the ongoing nets, providing status reports and weather updates. Organizers told the CBC that the hams on the island expect to have another training program for licensed candidates by springtime. This is Cell MB, KB3, TZD.
A proposal called the Amateur Radio Communications Improvement Act hopes to overhaul rules affecting data transmissions. Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, brings us that report.
Saying that federal regulations need to keep pace with advances in amateur radio technology, a United States lawmaker has proposed updating rules governing data transmissions over the amateur bands. The proposed Amateur Radio Communications Improvement Act would eliminate the current symbol rate limits set by the FCC. The lawmaker, Debbie Lesko, an Arizona Republican, writes on her website that regulation of symbol rates has become outdated because newer technology permits the spectrum to handle greater amounts of data. The proposed update of the FCC rules removes the symbol rate limit and sets a 2.8 kHz bandwidth limit, which is already in place for amateurs using 60 meters. The ARRL previously pressed the FCC to remove HF symbol rate limits, claiming that, among other things, it was an obstacle to experimentation. Although the FCC has previously questioned the need for any bandwidth limit at all, the ARRL has said there is a need for such limits because digital protocols could be developed that have excessively wide bandwidths. The ARRL issued a statement saying the league hoped the FCC would remove the restriction on its own without waiting for the bill to be passed. With lawmakers in Washington, D.C. concluding the 117th Congress, there was no further action taken on the bill. This is Kent Peterson, KC0DGY.
In another action in Washington, D.C., one lawmaker introduced a bill just before Christmas that proposes protection for amateurs and their antennas. The same protection already available to other forms of wireless communications, such as television, satellite, and internet. That update comes to us from Jim Dameron, NATMW.
An Ohio congressman is seeking to provide relief for home-based amateur radio operators who are unable to easily operate in private residential neighborhoods, such as condominiums, gated communities, and some single-family subdivisions. The measure introduced by Congressman Bill Johnson, a Republican, would grant hams the same preemption given in 1996 to consumers of broadcast TV antennas, satellite dishes, multi-channel multi-point distribution services, and wireless internet. The American Radio Relay League has previously urged the Federal Communications Commission to give the same relief to hams, but the FCC has told the league that such action can only come from Congress. John Robert Stratton, N5AUS, noted on the ARRL website that a joint resolution by members of Congress in 1994 supported the use of ham radio from private residences, recognizing it as a public benefit in keeping with the Amateur Radio Emergency Preparedness Act. This is Jim Dameron, NATMW.
When is it better to transmit on shortwave bands than on microwave? Ralph Squalacci, KK6ITB, has the answer.
It was only a test transmission, but the signals being transmitted from Gakona, Alaska, to the west coast of the United States were being done with a specific purpose. Before the receiving antenna arrays near Socorro, New Mexico, and Bishop, California, were to receive the chirping signals transmitted at around 9.6 megahertz, they were bounced off an asteroid known as 2010 XC15. With the asteroid twice as far away as the moon is from Earth, this was more challenging a feat than moon bounce. The longer wavelength than normal transmissions on December 27th were from the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, or HARP, in Alaska. It was HARP's first involvement in probing the interior of an asteroid, something NASA had hoped would be possible as part of preparation for the anticipated arrival of a much larger asteroid coming closer to Earth in 2029. Scientists say that the best way to successfully hit and deflect an oncoming asteroid and protect the Earth from damage is to learn how the asteroid's mass is distributed. Hams and amateur radio astronomers were invited to listen and submit their reception reports to HARP. QSL cards were to be sent to those who emailed their findings. Now that's some rare DX. This is Ralph Squillaci, KK6-ITB.
Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W9BCC repeater in Wausau, Wisconsin, on Sundays at 9 p.m. during the Rib Mountain Repeater Association Sunday Night Swapnet. A new program launched by an Ohio DX group honors those who inspire others in their pursuit of DX. Andy Morrison, K9AWM, has those details.
Achieving DXCC is an honor, but what about the hams who work so hard behind the scenes helping other amateurs achieve that coveted status of DXCC award winner? The Southwest Ohio DX Association has launched a new program that recognizes the hams who help other radio operators achieve their first 100 confirmed DX entities. The amateur receiving the assistance must be under the